said wells and the robber barns, straight to hell. The greedy thieves who came around and ate the flesh of everything they found, whose crimes have gone unpunished now, walk the streets a screaming now. Greetings, all you 99%ers. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. Okay, let's talk about some of the more interesting news of the past week, economic and, of course, political. Can't separate the two. All right, so what's the big news? Well, Paul Ryan's resigning. You know Paul Ryan, that number one economic criminal in the United States House of Representatives, has done more to take money out of the pockets of average Americans and threaten their security, including grandma and grandpa, than anyone else in Congress. Virtually anyone else in Congress. This guy is a disaster for everybody except the super rich, you see. Because that's his number one mantra there, to figure out how to give money to the super rich. He's been doing that from the time he took over the chairmanship. Well, the speaker, the chairmanship of the House of Representatives. His number one objective was massive tax cuts. He said it. He proposed it many times since he took that office. That was their number one objective of the House Republicans, tax cuts for businesses and investors. Every term it came up, the same thing over and over again. And you know how much he was proposing? $5 trillion. Long before Trump ever came up with that figure, Trump proposed $5 trillion of tax cuts in, I think it was February of 2016, when he was running for president. That's when his proposal came up. Well, his proposal was really based upon Ryan's proposal. That's where those two met. That's where they had a lot in common. So, you know, the originator of these tax cuts that came down here in December, this $5 trillion, and yes, once again, let me say, it's $5 trillion in investor and business and corporate tax cuts. Take a read my blog, the article, also published in Z Magazine, about the true dimensions of those tax cuts. $5 trillion of tax cuts for those guys, the rich. That goes right back to Ryan's 2013 and 15 proposals. It's the same thing. Yes, $5 trillion. Oh, and they raised $2 trillion on all the middle class, eliminating their exemptions and deductions, so it's a net $3 trillion hitting the U.S. budget deficit. $3 trillion. Oh, they say it's $1.5 trillion. Well, that's only because they make some absurd assumptions about economic growth for the next 10 years, which no way is going to pan out, and get it down to the 1.5. It's really $3 trillion net. Yeah, especially in the last 4 years. That's when it really hits. You see, they front-loaded it. And now they're proposing to make this bill permanent. You know, it's supposed to be only for 10 years. Well, they did the same thing with the Bush tax cuts. You see, Bush proposed these massive tax cuts, $3.7 trillion back in 2001, 2, and 3, got them passed. And it was supposed to last for 10 years. Well, end of 2010, what does Obama do? He extends them for two more years at a cost of $900 billion. And then in 2013, right after he gets elected in November of 2012, Obama cuts a deal with the Republicans in Congress to extend the Bush tax cuts for another decade from 2010 to 20. At a cost of another $5 trillion. So we get over $6 trillion of tax cuts under Obama, $5 trillion of which were just extending the Bush tax cuts, you know, and $3.7 trillion at least minimum in the first term of George Bush. So that's $10 trillion of tax cuts, 80% of which go to investors and businesses and corporations between Bush and Obama. And then, of course, we get Ryan pushing for $5 trillion more, picked up by Trump, $5 trillion he proposes. And guess what we got? We got $5 trillion more through 2028. You know, we're talking about somewhere, you know, close to $15 trillion at least, maybe more, of tax cuts over the course of these three presidents. $15 trillion. Well, no wonder we have rising budget deficits and debt. 60% of all the budget deficits is attributed to taxes. Taxes. The tax cuts and slow economic growth, which reduces the amount of tax revenue collected. There's your budget deficits and your debt. Now you add on top of that trillions of dollars and more spending in the Middle East, primarily. Trillions thrown down a rat hole. Nothing's come of it except more war. Can't say the U.S. won. What it won was the spread to conflagration further throughout the region. Trillions of dollars more on top of the tax cuts. And then the third big item is you allow the prescription drug companies and the health insurance companies to run amok and raise prices whatever they want is going to hit the government budget because of Medicare and Medicaid and government employees. Yeah, that's going to whack the government budget too. Those are the three things that have risen the total U.S. debt from 2000 from, I think it was $4 or $5 trillion to $21 trillion. It doubled under Bush and doubled again under Obama, and it's going to double again, I predict, by the 2028. Well, the Congressional Budget Office came out with some figures here, which are lowballing it, I believe. Oh, we're only increasing to $1 trillion a year from our $665 billion a year budget deficit. Well, J.P. Morgan Chase, a more independent source, I think, has estimated this year it'll be over $1 trillion this year, $1.2 trillion. We're looking at $1 trillion deficits for as far as the eye can see. And that's because of the big tax cuts and the $200 billion added for just 2 years here to the budget deficit for defense. And that's just beginning, you see. They're looking at $100 billion plus a year for multiple years. Well, you know, they're wrecking the U.S. economy, but on purpose, you see, because you create these big budget deficits, and now you got to go after Medicare and Social Security, and education. It's called starve the beast, you see. That's what they're doing. And that's the next round. That's the other shoe that's going to fall here. We got the big deregulations have occurred. You know, first thing Trump did was deregulate everything. Next thing he did was to lock up the Supreme Court. And by the way, they're locking up the federal appeals and district courts as well. You know, get that court system lined up. And then, of course, the big tax cuts. And the fourth offensive is going after entitlements, as they say, going after Social Security and Medicare. Okay, well, that's coming. That's coming. They're just not able to do it right away right now because they're focused on the trade thing. You see, the two things they really wanted when they got elected here in 16, and I wrote on this, read my blog, jackrasmus.com, there's two objectives. And these have always been the two objectives, you see, and that is tax cuts and trade. Well, wait a minute. We had all these free trade agreements. Well, the free trade agreements aren't enough. for them anymore. They want to renegotiate these free trade agreements and get a better deal for U.S. businesses. That's what it's all about. Let's renegotiate them. You know, we negotiated them NAFTA and WTO and PNTR for China in the 1990s. Right? Now it's time to squeeze the lemon a little bit more here and get a better deal for U.S. businesses. Because it's clear the global economy and trade is slowing. The rate of growth is slowing down and has been for several years. The pie is getting smaller. They're all getting worried and they're maneuvering, they meaning the different sectors of the global economy, maneuvering to ensure their share of that trade pie continues. Europe particularly concerned, they depend on exports even more than the U.S. China, of course, a big player, and the U.S. a big player. Japan, appendage of the U.S. economy, economic satrapy of the U.S. ever since World War II. They do what we let them do, and when we don't want to let them, they don't do. Okay, so, you know, that's the rationale behind all this ultimate trade stuff going on. Let's renegotiate a better deal for U.S. businesses. Okay, so let's talk about today the Paul Ryan resignation. What is that about? Is it really personal or is it political? What are the implications for the attack on entitlements, which was always one of the two main objectives for Paul Ryan? You know, big tax cuts, he put that in his pocket here. And now he says he's going to retire at the end of his term next January. What's that about? Well, he says he wants to spend more time with his kids. Yeah, that's what they all say. That's what they all say when they leave, when they resign, you know. But that's just the nice cover, you see. That's all that is. Well, we'll talk about that a little bit. What's really behind the Ryan resignation here? And we should talk again today about Trump and trade. You know, the circus is continuing. And this past week, we had two interesting developments, actually three. One is, surprise, surprise, Trump says, well, we should rejoin the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. You know, this Pacific Basin mega free trade deal that was negotiated by Obama, and which Trump ran on saying, oh, it was a disaster. We're going to tear it up. We're not going to join it. We're not going to agree to it. And he said the same thing about NAFTA. Oh, terrible. We're going to tear up the NAFTA agreement, start all over. That's what he said when he ran. Okay, so this week he says, well, maybe we should rejoin it. You know, as I've said before, the U.S. has always had the position that it was going to rejoin. It let Japan take the lead and negotiate the deal, 11-country deal. And the U.S. at some point when, you know, it was right, when the timing was right, would rejoin. Well, he signaled his intent, his interest in doing so already, Trump signaled. Well, what an about face, huh? Yeah. And he's, of course, going to about face on NAFTA as well. Already there's signals. You know, he holds this TV conference here, and boy, he's walking very tenderly on this whole NAFTA negotiation. Yeah, it's NAFTA light, you know, it's tokenism. You're not going to tear anything up. You know, that's just for public consumption, for, you know, the folks in the Rust Belt. Then whose votes he got because he said he was going to tear it up, right? That's all that is. You don't see much change in NAFTA, tokenism. I've said that for a long time, especially since our number one trading partner, Canada, is now in economic trouble. All kind of signs of economic slowdown coming in Canada. Housing prices are collapsing again and so forth. So, you know, there's some global pressure there as well, not to tear up NAFTA. You'll see some token agreements, by Mexico on autos, right? And you'll see some announcements by U.S. companies, oh, we're going to move some of our operations back from Mexico to the U.S. They'll say that, and they won't do it, but they'll say it. And that's how they'll sell it. No big change in NAFTA. I've said that many times. And as far as taking on the world, as Trump says, they all abuse us in trade. They have all of these countries abuse us, right? So we're going to renegotiate with all of them. Yeah. Well, look at the deal they just made with South Korea. South Korea, the number two steel importer to the U.S. in this phony agreement here, just a few weeks ago, totally left off the hook. No tariffs on steel coming from South Korea. In fact, no steel imports from South Korea were made permanent, not even temporary tariffs. They got totally off the hook. And no tariffs on any other South Korean imports to the U.S. Oh, some token deal, about the U.S. Can sell some cars, 50,000 cars, into South Korea, and South Korea will limit the amount of trucks it imports to the U.S. because that's the only thing holding up the U.S. auto industry, U.S. companies selling trucks. The sedans and the automobiles are just non-existent. And what are these SUVs all about? Crossover SUVs and so forth. Those are just trucks with a trunk. That's all they are. For people who want an inside cab and an inside back seat instead of a truck table in the back. Yeah, that's all that is. They're selling trucks. Okay. That's all there was to that phony South Korean agreement. The trade war is a phony trade war. It's phony. It's all for domestic political consumption, you see. It's all for playing to his base. He, Trump, making it look like he's doing something about this abuse of trade that are resulting in economic, problems and loss of jobs in the U.S. He ran heavy on that. That's his kind of economic nationalism, you see. And people buy that nonsense. Oh, but there's one element which is really true in terms of trade, and that's China. That's China. It's a phony trade war with the rest of the world, but it's real with China. Because Trump realizes, China's the real threat economically and even politically long term to the United States. It's not the mess in the Middle East. We went to wars in the Middle East to protect the oil, but now we don't need the oil. We got all the oil from fracking that we could use. We're exporting it, actually. We're exporting oil now. We're exporting natural gas, right? We have an excess of it, so we don't need to fight over the oil in the Middle East the way we once did, the U.S. once did. But we got to stay friends with Saudi Arabia because they buy all our F-16s, and we're going to use them as a proxy against Iran. So let's keep the Saudis and the Emirates happy over there, and give them all the guns that they want, because we're going to use them as the proxy, you see, in the Middle East as we turn towards China in Asia. That's the real turn. That's the next, big foreign policy push. And that's why the trade war with China is real. But it's not real with everybody else. Just to cover, all that steel and aluminum tariffs, nonsense. He announces them and then he exempts them, all of them. Virtually exempted. Ah, but it's so sold well in Pennsylvania and places like that, right? He makes a tour. Trump makes a tour, gives these speeches, and, agitates his base, tells them, oh, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And he turns around and he backtracks on all of that. But it sells there, and that's what people remember. So let's get back from the trade issue. We'll come back to that. And what about this Ryan thing? Right? What does that represent? Well, you get all these ridiculous explanations in the mainstream media as to what's going on with Ryan, right? Well, first of all, Ryan says, oh, I'm going to spend it with the kids. Believe that? Others, like Politico, the journal Politico and Salon online magazine, said, oh, Trump sold himself, I mean, Ryan sold himself to Trump and gave up his true conservative principles, and therefore, he's become such a Trump kiss-ass, which of course he has. He can't pursue his real conservative principles anymore, which were balance the budget. Ah, come on. That was never his principle. Balance the budget? No, no. Tax cuts first. The hell with the budget. The budget deficit, right? And what he means by balance the budget deficit, that's secondary. And what he really means, you see, the sentence isn't complete. He says balance the budget by cutting entitlements, you see. The mainstream media leaves off that last phrase. That's what Ryan was always about. And you can see it. He's willing to bust the budget here with $5 trillion. Tax cuts for the rich. He was willing to do that quickly. Well, it has nothing to do with him selling out his conservative principles. They, are these really principles? Principles are inviolable, right? Well, they sure violated their deficits and debt principle real quick when they got the cash out, didn't they? Yes. Oh, another argument is, he's leaving because he's unable to deliver on entitlement cuts now. Well, yeah, they can't deliver right now because they got these huge deficits. What they got to do is regroup and come back in the next Congress or the one after that and go after the deficits by cutting entitlements. Okay, Krugman. What is Paul Krugman's explanation for his retirement? Well, Krugman throws his hands up and says, quote, your guess is as good as mine, unquote. And then he rips into the whole record of Ryan, which is true. Don't disagree with him there. But your guess is as good as mine? The liberals are at a loss. What's going on here? Other sources report, say, more favorable to Republicans, say, he was unable to fulfill his mission to reduce the deficit, and that's why he's leaving, or he's just giving up now that the Republican Party has become Trumpified. And, of course, that's true. It is becoming more Trumpified. Up until now, since the Tea Party came in and so forth, it's been sort of an uneasy balance between these ultra-conservative, radical right elements in the Republican Party and the mainstream pro-business corporate wing of the Republican Party. They've tolerated each other. Well, they all came together here with the tax cuts, right? They all came together here, and they got really what they want, and now the rats are leaving the ship. Of course, they may be given a little push by Trump himself, but look, all these corporate traditional elites in the Republican Party are bailing out. They're bailing out now, aren't they? They're bailing out of the administration. They're bailing out of the House. 40 of them aren't running, et cetera. Well, they got what they wanted. They got their big tax cuts. And it's pretty darn clear that there's not going to be some terrible restructuring of trade policy. Free trade's going to survive here. There may be some tweaking here and there. but it's going to survive. So they got what they wanted, right? And this guy Trump is just a pain in the butt for him, for the traditional elite. You know, he keeps, stirring the pot with his dumb tweets, right? And they got to keep cleaning up the mess that he makes. And some of them are getting tired of it. They'll just go back and start making some real money again, right? Another argument is, Ryan is getting out because there's a Democratic wave coming and he's going to lose his seat anyway in his speakership, I should say, not his seat. He's not going to get knocked off, or wouldn't get knocked off in Minnesota. He's pretty strong base there. But that's why, he's getting out before he gets thrown out. Well, that's not true either. And then there's the dummy Newt Gingrich said, oh, he's just tired. Yeah, that's what Newt says. He's just tired. Well, none of these reasons are convincing. Here's my analysis of why he quit. Okay. He's doing what a lot of Republicans do up there at the top of their party, and Democrats too. He's going to spend the next 2 years lining up chips, you see, for his next run in politics, which could be the Senate, but it could even be the presidency. That's what he's doing. He's going to take 2 years. He's going to go do a lot of fundraising for Republicans and all these different, elections and so forth. He's gonna get debts, political debts, and then he'll call in the chips when it comes time for him to run again. And that's what he's doing, right? He's backing out here, and he's going to spend the next 2 years and to see if he's positioned for a presidential run. Right? He's going to make the rounds to all the big capitalists, genuflect and say, give me money here, will you back me, that kind of thing. You go to the Mercers and the Edelmans and all these people, the big money bags, and see if he can get their blessing over the next 2 years. He may not. He may not, but that's what he's going to do. That's one reason why. I think another reason is he accomplished his big goal, which was the tax cuts. You see, that's his biggest goal that he's been pushing for 5 years now. Another one is the revolving door syndrome here. Well, now that he's given them $5 trillion, there's time for payback, the revolving door. He's delivered for them. Now he's going to make a little money for him. Well, how does he do that? How does that revolving door in U.S. politics work? Well, when you've delivered for the money bags, then you come by and say, where's my cut? You see, corruption in America is legal, political corruption. It's not like in Latin America where they got their hand in the till while they're still in office, right? No, they wait and they get rewarded when they leave office. Well, look at, Ben Bernanke, former chair of the Federal Reserve, delivered 7 years of near zero interest rates for his friends, right? Bought up all their bad debts to the tune of $6 trillion, right? He rewarded him nicely. He's running around now giving speeches, $200,000 a crack. And they put him on boards of directors for several companies, right? He goes to two meetings a year per board, makes $50,000, right? That's a nice sinecure. And then maybe he writes a book, Guaranteed Sales, right? And that's how they get rewarded. Well, I think that's what is behind the Ryan retirement. He's going to make the tour now, right? He's going to go give these speeches, and they're going to pay him nicely. All these trade business organizations and so forth, they're going to pay him nicely. And he'll make some money. While he also makes connections here for political support for his next run-up. Well, you see, that's how it's done in America, right? You get seats on boards, you get speeches, You get a book contract. You get special, quiet, unofficial information about inside stock deals that you can invest in. And you make a lot of money. The Clintons did the same thing. How do you think they got rich after they left office? And you put the money in a foundation so you hide it from taxes, you see. And the foundation becomes an institution where they can make contributions to you quietly instead of directly. That's how it works. Well, Reagan kind of started it all. When Reagan left office, well, what's the first thing they did for Reagan? The corporate elite in the U.S., arranged a speech for him in Tokyo. He couldn't give the speech in the U.S., a 10-minute speech in Tokyo for which he was paid $6 million. That's like going in today, $15 or $20 million for less than an hour speech, one time speech. Yeah. That's revolving doors. That's how it's done. That's how they reward their friends in politics who do a job for them. Well, I think, that's part of the explanation. Ryan wants to make some money now, right? He wants to cash in. He delivered. He wants a little bit of payback here while he's lining up his chips, making speeches, and raising money for other Republicans to get on his side for support for another run somewhere, right? And I think he feels he created, or realized his tax cuts as number one goal, right? And now that we have such terrible deficits, there's no way he's going to get some maximum cuts in entitlements. They're going to chip away at it, right? They're going to chip away at this or that element of Medicare, Medicaid. They're going to chip away at the food stamps, which they're doing, eligibility, means tests, and all that kind of stuff. Chip away at education, chip away at these programs here. That's the strategy for the next 2 years, right? It's going to be interesting how Ryan, the number one or one of the primary drivers of this tax cut that's creating these terrible deficits and debts, is going to be the guy who runs against the deficits and debt. Yeah, he's going to rail against it and run against it, and he created it. Ironic. Well, that's the way politics works. You tell people what they want to hear. And then you go do what you plan to do anyway, which is usually what the money bags want you to do. That's the way politics works in America now. So he'll run against the deficits that he actually created, right? These are the real reasons why he left. And it's interesting, he's not going to leave right now. He's going to wait until January. Well, why is he doing that? Because watch what happens. Just before he leaves, he's going to come out with a big proposal to cut entitlements that he's going to use as the policy basis for his running again. That's what he's going to do. It's going to be, a horrible proposal, but it's going to be something that he'll try to get the Republican Party to use in its policy statements and so forth, right? That's what he's going to be identified with. So those are the real reasons why he's leaving, I believe, and not the phony reasons that you read in the media and by all these reporters here and other politicians, right? He's not giving up because Trump has prevailed. No. If anything, he's probably betting that the Trump phenomena will pass, right? It'll self-implode, which it may do. Okay, so that's the topic about Ryan and why he's resigning. Right? Let's return back to Trump and trade, right? We see this backtracking going on that had been going on in his trade offensive, backtracking for everybody but China, right? And this past week, signaling TPP, right? Well, we may want to join. He directed Lighthizer, his U.S. trade representative, czar, to look into getting back into the TPP. Well, what is this? You know, one of the first things he did when he came into office was to pass a, you know, a directive, regulation, I don't know what exactly it was, but saying TPP was dead. Well, it was already dead before he got there. He didn't kill TPP, right? It was stopped in Congress in an election year. It was too blatant in an election year when all these politicians, even Hillary, are sort of criticizing free trade. How are you going to push free trade through in an election year when certainly Trump and the others, everyone's, you know, sort of critiquing free trade deals? How are you going to push TPP through? It was bad timing, you see, bad political timing. That's why it didn't get through. Well, why is Trump signaling this once again? Well, he's signaling to the other 11 countries that signed the TPP deal, right? There is the TPP. The U.S. is just not a member of it. But they concluded the deal. You know, Japan was the proxy representative for the U.S., and they concluded the deal there, right? And what Trump is doing is he's signaling to these other 11 countries in Asia, right, that the U.S. will make concessions to unify them and around the U.S. interest to check China. You see, because China is pushing its own free trade deal and getting some traction in Asia. And the U.S., as part of its offensive against China in trade, you know, this is a tactic by the U.S., right? It's a signal to these other countries that we'll make concessions. You have to make concessions here. Let us back in, and you know, we'll give you more access to the U.S. market, which is what they all want, you see. Well, Trump says that, well, we only go in if it's better than the Obama deal. That's for public consumption. Because a lot of this trade stuff is all about domestic politics, you see. Okay, so, you know, that's what I think's behind this TPP announcement. And, of course, we talked about NAFTA, and now he's backtracking on NAFTA, saying, oh, I never said I'd tear it up. You know, we just want to make it better. Make it better. We're going to renegotiate, make it better. Of course, negotiations are going on right now. And the pressure from business interests is intensifying on Trump about NAFTA. Right? Their business interests are mobilizing against Trump. The key organizations, trans corporate organizations in the U.S., the Business Roundtable, National Association of Manufacturers, the Chamber of Commerce, all of them are united against Trump, you know, really significantly changing NAFTA. That's why he won't, you see, some sort of tokenism. And, you know, he goes on TV here this past week, wow, it sounds like he's all for NAFTA now, right? Oh, we're not going to exit. Oh, Mexico and Canada are friends, right? Oh, we just want to make it a little bit better for American corporate, a little fairer for American corporations, right? And you'll see some token deal where Mexico and Canada will make some announcements about autos, you know, as a token, auto imports and exports, because the auto industry is entering a period of significant softening here this year, going on. It started last year, but then we got the hurricanes, which boosted a lot of auto truck sales, but now that has dissipated, played out. And now the real weakness in the auto industry is beginning to appear. Okay. So, you know, that's where we're going, I think, with NAFTA. And that's part of the phony trade deal, our trade war that I mentioned about. It's phony for everybody but China. And with China, it's real. Why? What's the U.S. worried about in China? Well, China imports to the U.S. almost $500 billion of goods, merchandise, right? And the U.S. Imports into China about $130 billion. So you've got a $370 billion net shortfall on goods. Goods, not capital flows, money flows, but goods flows. Well, what Trump wants is to offset that with money flows, to China. The banks want to get into China, U.S. banks and shadow banks, and that's opening up, your financial banking system to the West is big mantra here. Demand for years now, and China is agreeing to it. China's agreeing to it. They've just passed laws that are going to be implemented soon that allow U.S. financial corporations and other corporations to have a majority interest in joint economic corporations in China. Previously China said you can only own 49%, but now you're going to be able to own 51% control. And there's even proposals on the books to allow 100% ownership. So the Chinese are opening it up to the banks, and that's what the U.S. wants. Trump wants also to open up the Chinese market to U.S. auto companies. More access is partly what it's about. But what it's really about, why the U.S. is really playing a tougher hand with China trade, is they're worried about the next generation technologies. Well, what are those? Artificial intelligence, 5G wireless, cybersecurity. These all have a military element to them. And the U.S. defense establishment, both the politicians and the corporations are worried. China's the number one threat to these new technologies. And the U.S. believes that China is trying to buy companies in the U.S. to, extract that technology. And in China, this whole technology transfer is rigorous. Companies have to share their technology if they set up minority operation in China, you see. So you have these different interests in the U.S. behind this tough trade with China policy. The defense interests primarily want to stop technology transfer. That's number one, I think. And, Trump listens to his generals. Whatever they say, he just fawns over them. Whatever they want, they get, right? I mean, it's probably the result of his bad conscience of being a draft dodger during Vietnam. So, in any event, it's the defense industry, one. It's the U.S. banks want to get in there, two. And to some extent, thirdly, it's Chinese tariffs imports to the U.S., right? I think, and I predicted in an article that will soon appear in the ICT Journal in Beijing, which I'll put on my blog when it appears, I believe that there will be a deal with China, that the U.S. will get some agreements on access, opening up more access. Well, they've already got it. There's 51%. You see, the Chinese have already agreed to that. But Trump will say, see what I got, right? He'll claim what's already been achieved as the result of his efforts, you see. So they want to open up the market there a little bit more for the U.S. There'll be some token limits on Chinese imports to the U.S., right? It'll be tokenism again. But they're really after this technology transfer, and that's going to be the tough one, you see. If they have a real trade war with China, it'll be over that issue. It won't be over tariffs, or the trade deficit, the size of the trade deficit. Mm-hmm. that won't happen, right? But we see, maneuvers on both sides occurring here, which sort of suggests that times an escalation of the trade war between the U.S. and China, at other times a backtracking on it. It's a lot of maneuvering, and it's not clear whether it will be a bona fide trade war yet. Trump is demanding more tariffs on the Chinese. He started out with, remember the steel a couple months ago, the steel and aluminum tariffs worldwide. Then he exempts everybody else, including South Koreans, and he leaves it on China. Well, China is like 12th or something in steel imports to the U.S., and most of those are semi-finished goods. So if you eliminate that, you're going to cause American corporations to have a loss as well. It's not raw steel coming into the U.S. He starts with that and leaves just China left. And then he slaps $50 billion of tariffs on Chinese imports to the U.S. And the Chinese say, okay, here's our $50 billion too. And he's targeting U.S. agriculture and that domestic base of Trump, right, which has got the attention and the resistance of agribusiness in the Trump administration. Okay, so, Trump starts out with his phony steel tariffs, minimum steel tariffs. The Chinese say, okay, $2 billion. And then he says, of tit for tat. And then he says, $50 billion. And they say, okay, $50 billion, tit for tat. And now it's up to $100 billion, maybe $150 billion, to be announced next week. But none of this is taking an effect right now, you see. And none of this will even begin the first $50 billion until May 22nd, right? And then you'll have a final decision. Okay, so the U.S. will probably also next week impose some limits on joint ventures and licensing and, not just tariffs. There's lots of tools in trade you can use, not just tariffs, right? And we'll see next week what the second list of $100 billion will be and what the Chinese will do in response. On the one hand, they said, well, keep doing tit for tat. On the other hand, this guy, this new President Xi, gives a speech this past week to what's the equivalent of in Asia to the Davos Forum in Europe, right? I forget what they call it. But he gives this speech, and it's kind of a concessionary speech. It sounds like it. Well, China's playing to erstwhile U.S. allies, and it's trying to assume this role that, we are the big promoters and defenders and champions of free trade here. It's the United States that's backing off. And he's having some success, you see, in Asia and even in Europe, which is another reason why Trump signals on the TPP, by the way. So he's lining up allies in Asia and Europe, but the Trump administration says, oh, Xi's speech is a sign that he's surrendering, right? Well, he's making concessions in the press, right? Looking like he's reasonable, where Trump isn't. It's all about maneuvering with U.S. allies here, and who will you go with, right? So we'll see next week whether it gets even tougher in terms of tariffs, and probably so. Probably so. It's all on paper right now. And they're all maneuvering, threatening and maneuvering. It's all on paper. But, Trump, I don't think, wants to deal with China before the election, you see, because if he strikes a deal with China, he can't continue to play that nationalist card on trade before the November elections. So he's going to continue playing that card and, continue being tit for tat. There may be some negotiations, and he'll try to look tough, unless he can get a deal from China. He'll try to look tough between now and November. And after November, they'll cut a deal with China. Okay. Well, it all depends how much China's willing to give up especially on the key issue of technology transfer. You see, it's not about goods and services and exports and imports and deficits. It's about next-gen technology, which has this strong military element to it. Okay, so you know, that's my take on the trade, Trump and trade, and news of the past week involving TPP, NAFTA, and China. And that's going to continue to be an interesting topic of policy throughout this period. Trump wants to look nationalist and tough to his base, not only because, you know, he's trying to prevent a Democratic sweep in November, which will jeopardize everything he does. You know, he wants that. But he's also appealing to that 40% of the Republican base that believe he can do no wrong. They really believe him. With all his tweets and all his lies and all his backtracking and everything, they still believe that he's acting in their interest. And he wants to keep that base mobilized because, you know, before the summer is out, maybe even before it is in, Trump's going to fire somebody in the Justice Department. It might be Mueller. It might be his boss, Rosenstein. But he's going to do it, and there's going to be a firestorm. You know, talk about, oh, congressional crisis, whatever, you know, the liberal traditional wing is going to argue. And there'll be a big stink, headlines in New York Times, Washington Post, et cetera. But nothing's going to come of it as long as the Republicans control Congress and the House. Nothing's going to come of it. They're not going to impeach him. I mean, that's such a silly notion. There's no way they're going to impeach this guy. And even if they did, he would not give up. You know, he's a street fighter. He will not give up. And that's why he's keeping his base mobilized, you see. He's going out there. He's in campaign mode almost, going out making campaign speeches. You know, his speeches in Pennsylvania and elsewhere sound very much like the speeches he gave during the campaign. He's running again, you see. He's keeping that base mobilized because when he fires Mueller or Rosenstein or both, you know, he's going to face a firestorm and he's going to mobilize his base and make it very, very clear that you come after him, you're going to split the country. You see, that's what he wants. You guys willing to do that? You know, you're willing to keep coming after me? You know, I've got 40% of the Republican Party. And certainly if you're a Republican, you better not join and come after me because you know, we'll turn Steve Bannon and his minions after you in your reelection. And Trump is clearly driving any of the liberals, quote liberals, moderates, let's call them, centrists in the Republican Party out, right? He drove out this guy Flake and Corker, and some of the others are departing on their own, quitting, you know. It is a Trumpified Republican Party increasingly, and by 2018 November election, after which it'll look even more Trumpified, whether it's a majority or a minority. Yes, the Tea Party, the right radicals, are winning. They're winning. They've almost got full control of the Republican Party, almost here, pretty darn close, right? And the Democrats better realize that. Okay, so that's what we're looking at. That's what we're looking at here. It's a you can't consider this free trade thing or this trade war apart from domestic politics, right? Trump is mobilizing his base, you know, using this economic nationalist theme of free trade, and he'll continue to do that through the November elections, I believe. And there won't really be a settlement. I mean, if you're going easy on everybody else and exempting everyone else, all your allies in the world, and leaving just China as the target, you know, if that's what you're doing, well, then you'll continue the hard talk with China, China trade, right? It'll all be about China. If there's a trade war, it will be a trade war with China, you see. And it's too early to tell whether he will back off of that as well. But right now he's got U.S. economic interests, agribusiness, and so forth, more concerned about NAFTA, you see. They sell more into Mexico and Canada than they sell into China. You know, it's a pittance. $130 billion U.S. exports to China, it's a pittance. And, of course, China's $50 billion exports into the U.S., I mean, $500 billion, excuse me, merchandise exports into the U.S. Is something different, right? I think, what is it, 10%, $500 billion is 10, well, $50 billion or $100 billion or something is like 10% of China trade with the U.S. In other words, it's a greater proportion. That's why the U.S. is raising its tariffs, or Trump is raising his tariffs, because clearly he wants to make it a quid pro quo kind of situation here. In other words, China trade is less important to the total U.S. economy than U.S. trade is to China. So anyway, we will see what happens, what rolls out here next next week with the next step of ratcheting up the China trade war. We'll see next week what happens here. But definitely, you know, it will continue. It will continue in the press and so forth until November, I predict. But the main point to remember is there's this domestic politics part of all this. You know, is it real or is it just for domestic political consumption? I think the analysts have underestimated how much of this is just domestic politics driven. Because truly, if Trump really wanted to do something about trade, he would not be exempting all of these U.S. allies, if he really wanted to. The only place he's up in the ante is with China. But I don't, you know, it's going to be tougher to pull off a win with China. I think China will agree to some concessions. Whether it'll be enough for Trump remains to be seen, enough for him to tout, you know, big victory. And we'll just have to see what happens with China. There'll be some concessions, but the big nut is going to be, can you crack the technology transfer issue? Because that's about defense and war capability. And the U.S. will not let China achieve any parity with the U.S. in terms of military. So we'll see. We'll see what happens there. We'll keep a watch on that. And we'll see what happens with the budget deficit as well. $1 trillion plus every year for as far as we can see. And what that results in. Okay, that's the show for today. And next week, I'm sure we'll have a lot of interesting developments and news. Mr. Trump will ensure that that's true. This is Jack Rasmus, Alternative Visions. Screaming now.